Hello, rap fans. It's Richard Herring here. Thank you for listening to my podcasts, powered by Acast Plus. Do tell your friends if you think they might enjoy them too. And do come and see me on tour in my show, Can I Have My Ball Back? Go to richardherring.com/ballback/tour for all tour dates, going to lots of places in the UK. Some extra gigs added in London at the Leicester Square Theatre and the Bloomsbury Theatre. The Leicester Square Theatre first gig is very nearly sold out, so do rush along to those shows, London, if you want to come along. Some of the shows selling fantastically well, some of them selling pretty badly. Hello, Swindon. Do you know I'm coming to your town? Please buy some tickets. And I do have to give a trigger warning. I've done the show only a few times and 6 men have passed out. After the bit where I explain what happens to you during an operation for testicular cancer. So, are you man enough to handle my balls? Only come if you are, have lots of balls and are not scared of balls. There is some mild testicle trauma involved in this story of testicular cancer. It's mainly funny, though, and if you don't come, that means you're scared to come, and I'm going to judge you, so... It's like going on a fairground ride, so do come along. It's going to be very exciting to see if you make it through. I'll give you a badge if you make it through unscathed. Anyway, come and see the tour, richardherring.com for all that news. Some great Rahalastapas coming up, I have to tell you, in the next few weeks. The tour was a lot of fun. Thanks very much to everyone who came. Sit back, relax, and enjoy my stupid fucking podcast.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Welcome to yet another Rahalastapa Book Club. I'm very honoured to be joined by a friend of the podcast, John Ronson, who's going to talk about his... I mean, it's the first time we've done a book that isn't actually a book, yet at least. It's an audio book slash podcast called Debutante. John joins me from inside his wife's wardrobe.
And look, she's got a good taste in clothing, as you can
there's
see.
Some sort of stuff hanging down off the shelf in front of your face. It's, you know, it's real. You know, I'm sure you've recorded from inside cupboards before.
We've only just moved house. We've moved to a little apartment in Greenwich Village. Amazing. and there's construction work going on all around, hence me being in the wardrobe.
it's fine. Whatever turns you on is good for me. So look, I mean, John, you've done a lot of books, many, many books. People will be aware of them. We've talked about a lot of them before. You've done these sort of podcast series, investigative journalism series before. Debutante, very good. It's just on Audible Plus, is it? Or can people buy it as well if they're not with Audible?
No, you can buy it, but on Amazon, but it's expensive. Okay. Like if you're not an Audible person, the best thing to do is probably sign up for the free trial, download it, and then cancel. But I should say that's not what I would do, because I'm a keen Audible user. I get 3 free credits every month and I use them. Right now I'm listening to Demi Moore's dark memoir.
Okay, good. Yeah, I think my wife's listened to that one. I love Audible, and they also do sponsor this podcast quite a lot. So don't just join up and then leave, though. That is an option. That, you know, it's so good, John. I think people will they'll do that and then go, "Hey, I'm going to stay on and I'm going to stay being a member."
I'm a big Audible fan. Right from the start of my career, I made a decision early on in my career, which was I'd only ever work for things that I myself was a fan of.
Okay.
And And I stuck to it. And yeah, there you go.
Good. Well, it's, tell us a little bit about Debutante. I don't want to, with these things, you know, there's obviously stuff to give away, and I don't want to give it away. So you tell me what you're comfortable about revealing about this this particular series.
Okay, well, 30 years ago, my beat was white supremacy. I used to like hang around in Ku Klux Klan compounds. I once spent some time, this is a diversion, but in my book, Them, one of the chapters is about a time that I was with a politically correct faction of the Ku Klux Klan that had banned, it was run by a guy called Tom Robb. And he'd banned the robes and the cross burnings and you know, banned all the things that were presumably the most fun about being in the Klan. and in fact, he allowed them to do one cross burning a year. Okay. And they were so rusty. I remember I walked there like in a field and the cross was like lying prone on the grass. Yes. And they were all standing around it, like, you know, scratching their heads, because they couldn't remember whether to raise the cross and then soak it in kerosene or soak it and then raise it.
Fantastic.
And then Tom Robb came over, their leader, and they said, "Tom, do we raise it and then soak it, or do we soak it and then raise it?" And Tom went, "You soak it and then raise it. How are you going to soak it once you've raised it?" And then he like gave me a look as if to say, "I'm sorry that my clansmen are such idiots."
Feels like if you soak it, now let's not get too distracted, but let's take the little distraction from this. It feels like if you soak it and then raise it, you're going to get dripped on, though. And then,
you get drips.
And then you'll be, when you set it on fire, you'll be set on fire. So I think both ways are pretty stupid. Maybe don't burn crosses, yeah. Maybe. I'm not sure.
And those robes, again... Yeah, they're allowed to wear their robes once a year for the cross burning. So, yeah. You know, those are flammable items.
Really, they're covered in kerosene, definitely, yeah. So, well, yeah. You know, I would encourage anyone in the Ku Klux Klan to attempt to set fire to themselves. I don't have that for me, that's fine. But, yeah, okay. But
yeah.
You have, like, a long history, and I'm sure we'll talk more about that, of going to meet fascists as a Jewish man. Often pretending not to be Jewish or claiming not to be Jewish if asked. Tell us more about this.
You know, by the way, you know, Louis Theroux once was in a, you know, similar situation.
Yeah.
And they said to him, "Are you Jewish?" And he isn't Jewish, obviously. And he said, "I'm not going to tell you whether or not I'm Jewish." And when they say to me, "Who is Jewish? Are you Jewish?" I say, "No." that's the difference between Louis and me, I guess.
That's good.
Yeah. So, so I spent like quite a few years, maybe 5 years, doing like Nazi type activities like that in the 90s. And I kept hearing about this woman called Carol Howe, who was a beautiful, wealthy, charismatic, former debutante and society girl, champion horse rider, who, through a series of very poor life choices, ended up right in the middle of that world. Yeah. And, you know, it was kind of intriguing right from the start, because most of the people you meet in, you know, Aryan Nations or, you know, clan rallies or whatever, working class. And here was this, you know, wealthy debutante from the richest part of Tulsa in that world too. So, yeah. So immediately that was kind of mysterious. Like, what, you know, who is she? What's she doing there? What's her story? How did this wealthy Tulsa socialite end up, you know, neo-Nazi? Yeah. And not just a regular neo-Nazi. She was dating America's craziest white supremacist. He's a man called Dennis Mahan, who's just, you know, erratic, nuts. So that was the first mystery, like, who is that woman? And then the second mystery was that she had an extraordinary story to tell. And her story was that at some point during her Nazi career, she turned and became an undercover federal informant. And she was warning the federal government, basically, about the Oklahoma City bombing before it happened. So this was the other story. This was the other mystery. Like, is it really true? Is this a conspiracy theory that may actually be true? Which is that this woman, Carol Howe, was warning them about the government, warning them about the Oklahoma City bombing, and also saying that there were more people involved in the bombing than just Timothy McVeigh. And the government just let it go. Like, yeah. For some reason, they let it go, and they could have prevented the worst act of domestic terrorism in America's history, but they failed to do it. So there were two mysteries. And 30 years ago, I thought, well, I'm going to try and solve this, and I completely failed to solve it 30 years ago, but it was always like in my head. And so just before the pandemic, maybe a year before the pandemic, I decided to have another go. And on and off for the last 3 or 4 years, I've been piecing together the story of Carol Howe.
Yes.
And that's the debutante.
Yes. And there's a 6-part series. I wolfed it up, I have to say, in a couple of dog walks, really, because it's fascinating. As with all your stuff,
Thank you.
You know, you've picked very good subjects, and you do proper investigative journalism and remain. I mean, what happens a lot with podcasts and a lot of true crime podcasts is that they get sucked into the more conspiracy side of it, or the crazier side of it. And there's loads of crazy stuff. I mean, there's loads of unbelievable stuff in this, and lots of weird either coincidences or clues. But you'll always keep quite a level head. And I think that's probably the message of the whole series is, you know, not to get drawn into the rabbit hole too far.
Yeah, and thank you for saying that, because that is what, you know, kind of emerged as what I thought was like my main theme, which was that, you know, there's a preponderance to conspiratorial thought all over the place, on the right, on the left, in the centre, like we all, you know, even rationalists, people who you know, consider themselves very reasonable people. And in a way that happens in true crime podcasting too, right? People are like desperate to, you know, solve the mystery and pin it on this person or that person. And I think, yeah, ultimately the debutante becomes a story about, you know, in these trying times, it's try and keep a level head and try and, you know, gather evidence instead of spiral ideologically.
Yeah. But, you know, there are some pretty amazing, weird little coincidences. I mean, the thing that you talk about quite a lot is there's a video of some strippers in a strip club that were sort of doing the circuit because it was strippers fighting each other, basically. So people were just looking at it because it was strippers having a cat fight with not many clothes on. So that was quite popular amongst being passed around between strip clubs. But someone then watched the whole evening's worth of footage, and there's one of the ladies is talking about meeting a guy who says, you know, I'm going to be famous in a couple of weeks, watch out for me on April the 19th or whatever. And so that's quite extraordinary that once you see something like that piece of evidence that comes out accidentally, it's easy to zoom in on it and think this is massively significant, which it may be.
I mean, yeah, absolutely. No, it's incredible. So, yeah, so there was a strip club in Tulsa called Lady Godiva, and a group of out-of-town strippers from Arkansas were there that night, and a big fight breaks out between the Tulsa strippers and the Arkansas strippers, and it was all caught on CCTV in the dressing room. And so, yeah, as you say, Richard, you know, it's this sort of unsettling sight of you know, almost naked women screaming at each other. And so, as you said, the security guards at the various Oklahoma, Arkansas strip clubs were passing this CCTV footage around, ostensibly as a warning, like, this Arkansas group of strippers are on the rampage.
Right.
Don't let them in. But really, I think they were just into watching the footage. And one of them, this is kind of amazing. You can see why it caught on as such an ingredient in the conspiracy theory, because one of them decided to watch the whole tape, presumably because the tape is basically full of women getting changed in the dressing room.
I suppose so. It could be like reading the articles in Playboy. You go, well, I've watched the exciting bit. Now let's see what they get up to in the rest of their day.
Yeah, when they're just doing their makeup and stuff. But yeah, one point earlier on that evening, this woman called Pam comes into the dressing room, one of the strippers, and basically says, you know, something weird just happened outside. I was sitting with a group of men, and one of them said to me, I'm a very smart man, And you're going to remember me on April 19th, 95. You're going to remember me for the rest of your life. And that was like 10 days before the Oklahoma City bombing on April the 19th, 1995. And so NBC got hold of this footage. These two really great journalists called Mike and Bob from NBC. And they went back to the club and showed all the women photographs of the men that Carol Howell, the debutante, had you know, pointed the finger at as being these unknown co-conspirators in the bombing. And sure enough, the women said, yeah, he was there that night. Timothy McVeigh was there that night, and so was Andy the German, who's this mysterious figure who may or may not have also been involved in the bombing. So what a great... I mean, you can see why a conspiracy theory you know, came up around that bit of evidence. Yeah.
I mean, but there's a sort of compelling story underneath it as well of, was this an actor? You know, he's always been called a lone wolf, and you know, there was obviously like a talk of there being a second person with him. Then the FBI sort of decided not to pursue that, or decided it was just somebody else who wasn't involved with him. But it does, as this series, you know, does demonstrate, there's a lot of links to other groups. There's a lot of possibilities, but nothing really super concrete that we can say that you could really point a finger at anyone.
Well, there's a lot of people today. This is, I suppose, the serious point at the end of the show, is that there's a lot of people who believe that America is teetering on the edge of civil war.
Yeah.
And a lot of people on the left believe that the way to stop that is to be much more proactive against white supremacy groups, like raid their camps. Now, 30 years ago, last 30 years and 3 weeks ago, they did that at Waco,
yeah,
and it was a disaster. You know, everyone died, including a lot of children. And at the time with Waco, the message that came out of Waco was, let's not do this. Like, let's not raid their camps. But now, 30 years later, the message is, let's do this. Let's raid their camps. It's the only way to stop civil war. So that means we have to be like especially careful about the links between different groups and so on. Because if we get too excited about the idea that white supremacists are all unified, and you may think they're lone wolves, but they're not lone wolves. They're all actually secretly connected. Then we become conspiracy theorists, and it's quite possible that we raid camps and a whole bunch of innocent children died, just like at Waco.
Yeah.
So, but then the counter argument to that is, no, you know, they're going to get us. Like, they are more connected than we think that they are. And look at January the 6th, look at Charlottesville. So this is like a big question. Like, what do we think about that? And I try and, you know, answer that question in the debutante too.
Yes. And I think, you know, it comes from the disbelief that, what, you know, it's hard. I mean, with all these things like 9/11, it's hard to believe that would work, that plan. So you start to construct the idea that someone's put bombs all the way through both the towers so that it's a controlled explosion by the government. You know, it's easy to go, well, that couldn't happen. You sort of think, oh, one guy couldn't organise all that on his own and do it on his own. And obviously there were other people who were involved. But obviously, you know, that's the reason it worked, really, wasn't it? Because he probably was, you know, or, you know, there weren't that many people who knew. So as you say, with this Carol, whether she knew or not, and whether people had, I don't know whether if she'd, you know, they'd taken her seriously, whether it would have really helped. Do you think
prevented the bombing?
It's hard to know, isn't it?
Well, I think I've come to a conclusion personally about that. Maybe I shouldn't say, because it's sort of, it'll give away too much of the of the story. But I think I know personally. So it was a weird, like, 30-year-long, it was like the story that got away. Like, I tried to do the story 30 years ago and I got nowhere. This time around, I think I got some really great stuff, including... I mean, one of my favourite parts is an interview with her first husband, who's just the best raconteur. She met him in a bar at Halloween, just swept him off his feet. After 3 weeks, she says, let's elope and get married. So they, you know, break into her mother's, mansion in Tulsa and steal a black dress and go to Vegas and elope. And then... And then, like, shortly after they're married, she says, let's both get matching swastika tattoos on our arms. So they go on him, like, besotted with her, like, they go off and get matching swastika tattoos, like, really big ones, like the size of Nazi armbands, which he then immediately regrets. He showed me a swastika tattoo now, and he's had it all covered with, like, little swirls and flowers. Just saying the show, you know, makes it look like an effeminate swastika. Yes. So this, him piecing together their marriage is just so funny. It's like Pretty Woman in advance. Like,
yes,
she's taking him to, like, Tulsa's finest stores and saying, choose anything.
Well, she has this amazing power over all of these guys, really, because, A, she's a beautiful, posh woman, and she's coming into this world. I mean, because, you know, the thing with Nazis, as much as they have this ideal of the perfect the perfect master race, most of them seem to be, you know, quite unattractive men. And so for a... No offence to any Nazis listening, by the way, if you are good-looking, I'm very sorry to...
Yeah,
that's, I'm very, you know, sorry to...
I made a documentary about Randy Newman once called I Am Unfortunately Randy Newman, and I'm like a huge Randy Newman fan. And the first thing he said to me as we turned on the camera is, when I meet my fans, not many of them are very attractive.
It's very much true of me as well. So it's a very, yeah, it's a very rare. It's good for me, but it's a very rare thing that a normal human being likes Richard Herring's works or the Nazis. So, you know, but I think they're two quite different groups, I hope. But yeah, I don't want to offend any Nazis. So don't write in if you're a Nazi and have offended and you're good looking. But yeah, but it's an amazing. But all these guys basically can't believe their luck, and that she's obviously somewhat crazy and somewhat impulsive, let's say. And therefore, you know, you've got this beautiful woman coming in and being prepared to form relationships very quickly with them. And so none of them could quite. That guy, I think, still can't quite believe his luck, even though it didn't work out so well for him. So.
His luck, but also his heartbreak. I mean, she broke his heart. I think it took him, because she left him for America's craziest neo-Nazi, Dennis Mahan. I mean, and, you know, it took her, I think, a long time for the heartbreak to be cured.
Yes.
But,
I think what's quite interesting, and the fact this is over 30 years, because your early work, whilst not being completely lighthearted, I mean, you sort of got there first with them, you know, it was before 9/11, and obviously, and you were sort of warning there was something on the horizon, and you were very correct about that, and you were the first person I really saw express that. But as you say, you know, you were finding a lot of the funniness in these extreme groups, whereas now, 30 years later, and with all the stuff that's happened, and with the you know, the way America's going, it does feel more serious. And this is a very harrowing work in a lot of ways, and obviously a lot of people die in this story, including several children are killed in the Oklahoma bombing, which is very upsetting. You talked to the grandmother of a couple of those kids.
Yeah, a grandmother who's convinced that Carol Howe's story is true.
Sure.
And that, so, you know, then the question is, well, is Carol, I say this in the show, is she a kind of femme, you know, she's not just, you know, she was a femme fatale for Nazis, but was she also a sort of femme fatale for conspiracy investigators too, trying to make sense of, you know, what could just be senseless?
Yes, exactly. And I think that is the, and, you know, but the way America's going, and it's like you say, there are still some funny moments in this story, because there is a sort of funniness to this when people have such extreme views and it's so crazy, and they're self-harming, really, in this way, as, you know, like the tattoos and, I mean, dial a Nazi, which, dial a racist, rather.
Dial a racist.
Is a very, you know, that would be a comedy sketch. In Britain, dial a racist would be an 0898 number where Ricky Gervais did some, you know, a character who was racist and you'd laugh at him. But in America, this was, you could dial a racist and hear today's racist views.
Right. Well, yeah, exactly. This is pre-internet. That, you see, what happened was Carol had an accident, and when she was with Greg, she broke both her feet. And when she was in bed convalescing, she started phoning this local telephone answering service called Dial a Racist, where you'd phone. This is like pre-internet. And somebody, like a racist, would leave an outgoing message and you'd just phone in and like listen to it, like a 20-minute sermon about, you know, the international corporations and the Jews control America, they're about to destroy the white race. And so Carol, while she was convalescing from her broken feet, would phone up and listen to Dial a Racist, and then she fell in love with the voice and sought him out. And that was her second, you know, great Nazi relationship. No, well, her second great relationship.
Yeah. And again, the guy just immediately goes, yep, okay. Yep.
Yeah. I mean,
brilliant.
You would.
How's this happened? Well, you know, but it's sort of, it does show the vulnerability and patheticness of men. That just someone turn up and you're immediately in a relationship with them because they want to, you know, think, could this woman who's obsessed with Dial a Racist not be the greatest person ever? I don't know.
Totally. No, he completely fell in love with her. But he also thought, well, you know, I could make her a Aryan goddess spokeswoman. I could get her on Oprah. He never managed to get her on Oprah, but he did get her on German TV. And he had her recording some Dial a Racist messages too, which they abandoned. Somebody from White Aryan Resistance told me that they abandoned the idea of having Carol record those messages because she sounded so robotic. Yes. And we found a tape of her. And she does sound very robotic.
Yes. Well, again, that's another thing that you're always great at. And you find all this stuff and, you know, you've been given a box full of evidence from one of the trials, and you find all these answer phone messages and things, which, you know, it's kind of very poor quality audio quality answer phone messages, well, of course, because they're from the 1990s, but
amazing,
just amazing stuff that exists still, you know.
Yeah, the archive, I think, really just helped so much. These are things that have never been heard before. Yeah, answer phone messages when Dennis, the Dial a Racist man, was like berating Carol. And then when Carol became an undercover informant, we've got the tapes. And, you know, none of this stuff has ever been heard before. So it was very exciting to find it. Just a public defender. This is what perseverance does in journalism. The fact that we came along 30 years later and said, you know, we really want to piece together Carol's story. And somebody from the Public Defender's Office just said, you know, meet me in a bar after work. And I thought I was going there to interview him. And he said he didn't want to be interviewed and he didn't want to be named, but he had something to give us. And he just handed over this box. And the box had been sitting on a shelf for 30 years. And it was all this incredible Carol Howe stuff, you know, surveillance tapes, answer phone messages, court audio. It was just great.
Yeah, I mean, it is. It's very impressive. And as always, you know, I think what you're doing with podcasts and audiobooks is, you know, and it's really exploring that. I mean, this is very long, very long form, long game journalism. I think it's fair to say over 30 years. But you know, you find these interesting stories and you really get to the bottom of them. And they do make absolutely fascinating listening, I think. I'm sure I've talked to you about this before. But the thing that always comes up to me when I'm listening to you talking to these people, and you put yourself in these situations which are, you know, potentially very dangerous, with very dangerous people who wouldn't like you if they knew you were Jewish, and some of them do know you're Jewish.
And some of them just instinctively don't like me.
That might just be it. No, I don't think that's fair. But it's a dangerous position. It's sort of interesting because a lot of the time they're sort of not very very pleasant to you, but there's an undercurrent of menace even when they're being pleasant with you, which I think, you know, you talk to the German guy and that's very much there because he's being sort of as nice as anything with you, and you find out something where he's besmirched you elsewhere. How do you, is the person, do you think about your personal safety? Is how do you ensure that you don't get into trouble, or is it just something that you have to put up with because this is what your job is?
I think I think about my personal safety a bit. Like if I'm in a room with somebody, I do sort of clock where the exit is, but mainly I think I'm just so excited about being on an adventure that I just go with it and don't. There's, you know, when I was a kid, there was this awful footage that was on the news of a guy, a journalist, a cameraman, filming his own murder. Like, right. He's filming a sniper and the sniper like turns the gun to him and shoots, and he gets killed.
Right.
And it's just, it's always haunted me, but partly haunted me because it makes you realise that, you know, as a journalist, you do blunder into these situations, and you do think you're kind of invulnerable. Because what we're doing is like gathering material to go home and make it work. And we're so like intent on gathering the material that will then make a really good story when you get back home. You do blunder into dangerous situations, I think. But touch wood, like nothing... There's been a couple of risky, like I was outed as a Jew at a jihad training camp one time, near Crawley, and I guess that was risky.
Yes,
with Omar Bakri Muhammad. Look at me with the infidel John, who is, and then he paused and he went, a Jew, and they all went. I've told this story before. I said, surely it's better to be a Jew than an atheist. And I heard someone go, no, it isn't. The crazy thing about that is that I am an atheist. So why would I say that? Why would I just like assert my Jewishness like in a jihad training camp? And then there was another time at Aryan Nations in Idaho when all these skinheads surrounded me and basically asked me if I was Jewish. Yeah. And I said no. And then... and then some guy came over and like made a joke to like alleviate the situation. And I've always wondered whether he was an undercover agent, protecting me.
Yeah, that could be. I mean, yeah, it's sort of interesting because once they're presented with someone who they, you know, is this outside figure that they hate and you're amongst them and they like you, I think they do mainly like you, you know, I think that's the thing. So it's hard for, it's almost like they have to do it in air quotes and, you know, and they're sort of saying the stuff but winking at it as they're talking to you. So it's really fascinating. It's fascinating as well that you're so drawn to that, though. I mean, I can understand why you're drawn to it, but it's sort of...
It's mystery. I mean, what I'm drawn to most of all is mystery. Right, like, there's something about the world I don't understand, and so I want to understand it. Yeah. And quite often the great mysteries are happening on the edges of society. So that's why I end up like on the fringes often. It's not so much because I'm interested in fringe culture, but I'm interested in trying to solve mysteries.
Yeah,
I think.
Yeah, I think that. Well, yeah, it does go all the way through to the men with the goats, the men who stare at goats, and all of those things. Yeah,
they're psychopath test. They're all about.
Yeah.
So even Say You've Been Publicly Shamed, which is much more a book about like our world, because we all take part in shamings as either shamers or shamed. So it's much more about like our daily lives. But there's still a kind of mystery to solve, which is why do we behave so cruelly on the internet? Like, what's going on there? What factors are inspiring us to behave in such cruel, brutal ways towards our fellow humans. Yeah. So I think with every one of my stories, there's a mystery to solve. I admire but can't do what somebody like, say, Catlin Moran does, where she has like an area that she's an expert in, and then she sort of explores the same area, you know, for multiple different ways. Like, I can't do that. Like, if I understand a world, I've got no interest in it. My interest is in worlds that I don't understand.
Yeah, but as I say, I think you're good at spotting what will make a good story, but you also are kind of ahead. I mean, I think you're ahead of the curve in the shame thing. I mean, obviously, people were aware of people being shamed on the internet, but, you know, you are, again, one of the first people to kind of properly examine that. And with them, really, way ahead of the curve, I think, for most people.
Yeah, I went to see my friend Fenton Bailey, the documentary producer. He gave a talk here in New York the other day, and Ronan Farrow was interviewing him. Yeah. And Ronan Farrow, they were talking about that, about trying to be slightly ahead of the curve in storytelling. And, you know, Ronan Farrow basically broke the whole Me Too thing with Harvey Weinstein. And, and he said, you know, we are like... I can't remember the exact phrase he used, but sort of basically we're kind of like Simon Cowell's, but for stories instead of Harry Styles. We're trying to think what will people want next?
Yes.
That is kind of, you know, part of our job.
I guess. Yeah, that's good.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promoting for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Yeah, so, yeah, I mean, I was glad that the, you know, I thought it was, we did mention the grandmother with whose grandsons have been killed in the Oklahoma bombing. And I think I thought for a minute when that came in, it was just going to be about this, and it is quite a harrowing thing. And I think, well, I suppose it is important to include that detail because it is, you know, it is absolutely horrific. But yeah, then she is a central figure in the conspiracy as well. So there is a reason for having her there.
Yeah, absolutely. No, completely. Like, and I knew that people would go through that thought process. Yeah. Like, is this woman just here to show how horrific the bombing is? And then, like, an episode or even two episodes later, she reemerges as a character in a different way. So yeah, so I really like that as a little structural thing.
Yeah, but there's not, you know, you've got a good instinct for just what you can, you know, this is going to come back in a little while, but I'm not going to tell you why.
Yeah.
So you've got there's a nice playfulness to it. And I think that's a real skill with this story, because there's so much in this story that, you know, obviously the main event at the middle of it is just so harrowing and horrific, but all the stuff around it is sort of fascinating and just as fascinating as the Nazis are the people who have dedicated their lives to trying to solve it. And then I suppose what you're good at is having your think about it and walking away. And that's probably why you don't go down the rabbit hole too much. But yeah. I can absolutely understand why in that woman's case that she would devote the rest of her life to it. And it's, you know, and it's a very good, I love the stuff she said about people saying, oh God, you know, I prayed to God and that's why my kids are okay. And you go, I prayed to God every night with my kids and they're not okay. So, you know, that bullshit of people going, God, you know, I survived a plane crash. God was watching over me. He killed 300 people. I'll save you.
It was an incredibly honest and powerful moment when she said that. Because she's obviously, you know, I don't know her background, but I very much assume that she was a Christian. That's a very religious part of the world, Oklahoma. And yeah, she was basically telling me in the interview that, you know, all this really questioned her entire belief system.
Yeah.
And that the anger and the rage that you would feel when you see somebody on the news saying, I prayed that my kids would be okay and God listened and my kids were okay. And yeah, just the rage you would feel when you hear that. You know, I prayed every night and my kids both died.
Yeah. Yeah, it's very moving, and as I might, you know, so I can understand why she got obsessive, but a lot of, you know, you're managing to go through all these subjects where people are very obsessive, and you know I've seen countless middle-aged men go down rabbit holes and become obsessed with, you know, various conspiracy theories or various
more now causes. Than ever, right?
Exactly,
more
yeah.
now than ever. It's fascinating.
But you seem to manage to avoid it. Is there anything that, you know, is there anything that you sometimes think, oh, I'm getting sucked in too far into this? Or do you always manage to keep that? Do you feel like you're, do you worry that? Because I worry, you know, I see people who I thought were intelligent friends of mine and they're, you know, they're going about conspiracies about, you know, cars being allowed in cities and the climate change isn't real, and you're going to go, what the fuck has happened, or whatever it is. And I sort of worry, is there a day where, as a middle-aged man, you wake up and go,
and you
okay,
know that.
Now
yeah.
I hate this group of people. So do you think this is keeping you away from that, or do you think there's ever any danger that, you know, how do you keep that balance, I guess, is what I'm asking.
Well, I actually think about that quite a lot, because like you, I've seen so many people from like our peer group
just
fall into like obsessive, you know, being obsessively into this particular culture war or that particular culture war, to the extent that it's, you know, utterly swallowed up their lives.
Sure.
And you know, and so I've thought a lot about, A, why is that happening? That's the reason why I wanted to make my BBC show, Things Fell Apart, to try and figure out why, you know, how have people ended up, you know, so lost to culture wars?
Yeah.
But I think, I thought a lot about why those people fall in that way, and also why I don't. And I think I do have an answer to why I don't. And it's because when I don't know if this is unusual or not, but when I listen to somebody extol a point of view, I always think to myself, oh, yeah, that makes total sense. And then when I listen to somebody extolling like the opposite point of view, I always think, yeah, that makes total sense. Like, I think I'm really good at getting inside people's heads and understanding, you know, their worldview. But I'm also very good at not being stuck in it. I'm good at getting, and so I end up in with a balance.
It is quite rare. I think more people used to be like that, that you were prepared to listen to the other point of view and understand, just try and understand why the other person thinks what they do. I think you would at least go, I don't agree with it. You know, I think we used to have conversations with right-wing people and go, I don't agree with that, but yeah, let's have a listen and talk about it, and I'll try and convince you my way, and you'll try and convince me your way, and we'll walk away probably both thinking the same thing we thought. It does seem to have changed, but I think that I think I'm the same as you. I love this sort of stuff, and I'd love conspiracy theories to be true, and I, you know, or you know, the supernatural. I'd love it to be true. I don't think it is, but I'd love it to be. But I'm also open minded to want to hear what other people are saying. And I think that's the try. You know, I think some people might be disappointed if that they don't necessarily get like the answer, though you know, I don't think you ever really, you know, there are podcast series that make you think you're going to find out who the murderer was at the end, and then they go, well, you know, we don't really know what happened, and that's very annoying. I'll wait to the next series. But you know, I think this the beauty of all of your stuff, but this one particularly, is that it is very open-minded, and it isn't, you know, even when you're dealing with the, you know, the most extreme right-wing people in America, you're listening to them and trying to understand where they came from.
Yeah. And you know, in the old, when I started out, you know, most conspiratorial thinking was like in the world of extremism, political and religious extremism. But now you kind of see it everywhere. As I said before, you kind of see it in true crime podcasting in its way. That's kind of like conspiracy theories. And you see it on the left, I think, probably more than it used to be.
Yeah.
You see a lot of paranoia on social media about all sorts of things. People confidently expressing what seems clearly a paranoid point of view. And you see hitherto sensible people fall down rabbit holes and get completely trapped. All over the place you see that. And so, yeah, it's like this. And I don't know, is it, you know, it's probably a combination of age to an extent, the algorithms, the way that the algorithms, you know, fuck with our heads, the way the echo chambers, the way that we all define ourselves as being in opposition to other people. So, and a lot of this stuff is just really new, and it is, and I think it's the biggest story of our time. You know what it did? I'll tell you when it did happen to me. I said I was good at, you know, seeing both points of view of everything, but it really happened to me during the Trump years. I definitely suffered. I'm not saying it wasn't derangement, but you know, the right call it Trump derangement syndrome, and I had it, and I think I still have it. But I'm not sure if it's derangement, because I think Trump really is a genuine threat to democracy. And the one thing I didn't anticipate, though, was that when Trump really pushed at the edges of democracy with the whole election lie stuff, democracy held firm, like the institutions held firm. And that made me think I've just spent the last 4 years in a state of real, genuine, debilitating fear that society is going to crumble. And when push came to shove, society did hold firm. But that doesn't mean that if Trump doesn't get in for a second term, things aren't going to crumble then. They might.
Sure. I mean, it does. You know, it's worth, you know, I think equally to be the other way and just go, nothing's ever going to go wrong, which I think is a lot of nothing's gone wrong in our lifetime, so therefore we're going to be fine. Yeah, but just before our lifetime, there was quite a big event where things went quite off the rails. So I think it's understanding that it is possible. Mm. I mean, the problem is, I think that everything's been seen as being fascist or Nazi for so long, even things that are just, you know, aggravating or just not your point of view. So that when the real thing comes along, it's harder to identify, or at least it's easier for people to go, oh, you say that about everything.
Totally. Yeah. That's why, you know, everyone calls each other pedophiles nowadays, or paedophiles, as you Brits say. Yes. I remember saying paedophile to, I was in a meeting in This American Life, and I said the word paedophile, and they were all like, wow, you make it sound so fancy.
No wonder pedophile. You Brits are such pedophiles. It sounds brilliant when you say it that way.
The phrase is concept creep. And if everybody's calling everybody a paedophile now, you know, the people who benefit the most maybe are paedophiles.
That's true. And so there's, we can take this out if this is too much information, but, you know, you are trying to track down Carol for an interview, which doesn't happen in this particular series so far, but is there hope that there may be another episode where you do?
I certainly hope there's hope. I mean, we got more Carol stuff than I possibly imagined would. Like, you know, this incredible archive and everything. But yeah, she agreed to an interview and then went silent, which I think is kind of resonant of the kind of behaviour of hers that I capture in the show, so it didn't come as a huge surprise. But if I can still talk to her, I'll certainly do another episode.
Yeah, of course. Yeah,
assuming that Audible are into it, but why wouldn't they be?
I think they would be. Well, look, it's a really fabulous series. It's worth joining Audible to listen to this. So give it a go, and you know, maybe it'll turn up somewhere else eventually for a reasonable amount of money. You never know. You're in New York at the moment, but you're coming to the UK in the next couple of weeks? Or?
Yeah, and I've got a couple of things I'd like to tell people about.
Yeah, sure, go ahead.
Okay, so on May 24th, I think, was it May 23rd? Yeah. I think it's May 24th. I'm doing a one-off Things Fell Apart show at the podcast show at the Business Design Centre in Islington at 7 o'clock in the evening. And there's still like about 75 tickets to sell for that. So please do come. It's a thing. I've got a mystery guest and I'm unveiling a brand new story that I've never told before from season 2 of Things Fell Apart. So yeah, that's the podcast show on May 24th. Then on May 28th, I'm doing a half-day writing workshop where I'm teaching narrative nonfiction storytelling. And we've still got about... That's expensive because it's like a proper half-day thing. Sure. But we've still got about 15, 20 tickets left to sell of that. Anyway, if you want to know about those... Oh, and I'm at the Hay Festival on June 2nd, I think. Me and Dolly Alderton are at the Hay Festival doing a thing together. So those are my three events that I'm doing when I'm over imminently. And if you want to know more about them, just look on the pinned link on my Twitter or my Instagram, which is John Notson.
But it all sounds fantastic, I have to say. Course sounds very good.
Yeah, I've put a lot of work into both of those things, and if the course goes well and people think that they've got their money's worth, I'm going to do maybe 7 or 8 of them across the country, maybe in November.
Oh, brill. That's fantastic. You did mention Demi Moore. I ask everyone if they're reading or listening to anything they would like to recommend that isn't their own work. Have you got? Is there anything else you're enjoying at the moment?
Phone? Let me just look up my... the answer is listen, because I do tend to listen to everything and not read anymore.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah. Do you find you concentrate better?
Yeah, I can't. For next week's... Well, maybe not next week's, but I'm doing an interview tomorrow with a mystery guest I'm not allowed to talk about. But I've had like a week to read his book on a PDF as well. It's fucking very difficult. Very difficult to read.
So difficult. Well, I'll tell you what lately, yeah, Inside Out by Demi Moore I thought was good. This really horrendous. I mean, it's beautifully written, but so hard to listen to. Right. A Mother's Reckoning by Sue Klebold, who's the mother of Dylan Klebold, who was one of the Columbine shooters. Right in the middle of it, she bigs up Rob Delaney. That came as a surprise. it's an incredibly necessary book, but my God, it's a hard book.
Yeah.
And I really enjoyed recently, His Name is George Floyd, which just won the Pulitzer, which is just a biography of the George Floyd dynasty. I'm just going down my Audible reading. More fun was Craig Brown's book about the Beatles.
I read that last year. I must get him on here because it's been if he wants to come on, because I really loved that book. I thought that was terrific.
Yeah, I thought it's so good. You know, a great thing about nonfiction is that it can still be the wild west of storytelling. Like if you can keep people hooked, you can really experiment with storytelling. And Craig Brown does that. He's such a brilliant kind of virtuoso writer, and he really experiments with the way he tells the story of the Beatles, and he pulls it off so well.
Yeah, I agree. It is terrific. Brilliant. Oh, look, John, thanks so much for giving us some of your time in your cupboard. I love doing this transit. Like, so it doesn't feel like you're 3,000 miles away, but I love doing. I love the fact that technology allows us to do this and talk to each other from so far, and it's so immediate. So that's terrific. But thanks very much. Good luck with all of your stuff. And if you haven't read John's other books, read all of John's other books or listen to them. Do you do your own audio books, Jeremy?
Oh, always. I get very disappointed when it's not the author. I tell you, the one where I got really disappointed was Quentin Tarantino's Cinema Speculation. A lot of authors these days, he does like the first couple of chapters and then they get somebody else to do the rest of it. The other guy was great, don't get me wrong, but Quentin Tarantino was amazingly good and then it was just so disappointing when it wasn't him anymore.
Yeah, so. I think it's a good... I think as a writer, I do say this a lot on this podcast, but I think it's a really great thing to be forced to read your own book out and check it's okay.
It's a shame.
If it's bad, then you're going to go, okay, we've got to go back and rewrite this. But yeah, so it is a nice thing to do. I agree with you. I kind of get annoyed if it's not the actual person.
Yeah.
Unless they're dead, John, but you're very much alive for the moment. But if you are ever murdered by an extreme right group, I'm going to do a podcast about trying to find out what happened about it. So.
Please do. Okay, and unlike me, come to a firm conclusion.
I'll come to a firm conclusion. The podcast is going to start with you, with us saying this. And you say, please do. And I go, I have John's permission for everything. For the awful things I'm about to do. I seriously hope that that never happens, John. Thank you very much. Sorry for wishing death on you just at the end, but otherwise I thought it was quite good. Thank you.
Yeah, it was a delight, and I hope to do your Leicester Square live show some point.
Yeah, come back in the autumn or whenever you want. You're always welcome. Thank you also to Chris Evans, Not That One, and Ben Evans, Not That One as well, for all their hard work on this podcast.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
This message comes from BOF sponsor eBay. You'll know real when you get it. It'll say eBay Authenticity Guarantee. And you'll feel it. Maybe it's a head-turning handbag, a watch that says it all, jewelry that makes you look like the gem, or sneakers and streetwear so fresh every step feels fly. eBay gets it. So look for the blue check mark next to that thing you love and be confident that every inch, stitch, sole, and logo is checked by experts. With eBay Authenticity Guarantee, you can trust that feeling of real is always in reach. Ensure your next purchase is the real deal. Visit ebay.com for terms.
Thanks for listening. Go to gofasterstripe.com for all your Rich Herring download and book needs. Go to richherring.com/gigs to find out if Can I Have My Ball Back is coming near to you. And please listen to as many podcasts on this feed as you possibly can, and make your family and friends and children and strangers, make them listen too. Do get consent from everyone before you make them listen, though. All right, thanks for listening. Go and listen to another one. Bye-bye.